All right, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and this is the... What is it? The Grim Articles Show. Sorry, I'm a little bit wore out. If you guys watched the video I did for Going Your Own Way where I talked for 2 hours, yeah, that's not gonna be this one. So, some guy literally messaged... Well, he put a comment on there, and he said, "What is this?" And I said, "I'm sorry, I won't rant like this anymore."
Is it, no, but for real, what is this?
Oh no, he got the idea. But anyway, our first article is a little weird for us to cover, but I'm just like, hey, this is a... Oh, excuse me. I'm not gonna do that. That's weird. Yeah, there's a certain button on Brave that'll basically put you into the... You know, how the browser works and all that shit. But anyway, I don't know what Donald Trump has to do with any of this, but anyway, it says, Kentucky boy uses mom's phone to order 70,000 dum-dum lollipops to share with his friends.
I wonder how much that runs.
8-year-old Liam LeFevre's friendly gesture turned into a surprise $4,000 bill for his mom. That's an...
And they're cheap, so you can only imagine how much...
That's an ass-whooping waiting to happen.
Oh, that's more than an ass-whooping. I'd get rid of that one and make a new one.
A Kentucky woman was in a sticky mess when she found stacks of boxes containing lollipops on her front doorstep. The surprise delivery was ordered by her young son while he played on her phone. Ollie LeFevre says she tried stopping 8-year-old Liam's Amazon order for about 70,000. Jesus. I can't even believe they put that through. Suckers before the treats arrived, but it was too late. Amazon had already delivered 22 cases. Look at all these.
Oh, yeah.
22 cases to her home. He told me that he wanted to have a carnival. And he was ordering the dum-dums as prizes for his carnival, LeFevre said. Again, he was being friendly and he was being kind to his friends. The surprise got worse after a quick check of her bank account. She owed about $4,000 for the order.
Oh, and they usually charge you every day if she's overdrafted, and I'm sure she was.
When I saw what the number was, I just about fainted, she said. Then... She found out that 8 more cases from the order were unaccounted for, she said.
Excuse me, if I'm going to pay this money, I expect every case.
Yeah, she said after a trip to the post office, those cases were returned to sender. Her efforts to get a refund took a bit more time, but she got her money back. After a long day of working with the bank and talking to a few news stations, Amazon called and they're refunding my money, she said. LeFevre said she was changing some settings on her phone to make sure there's never another surprise delivery at home.
Yeah. I'd be more than that. I'd beat that kid's ass.
Christ.
Give him a Kentucky ass whooping.
70,000 lollipops. Jesus. That's an ass whooping.
That sounds like a Lily Phillips challenge right there.
I wouldn't, man.
Can she blow 70,000 lollipops in a day? Well, she doubles know. Up, takes a few at a time. I bet she'd make it work.
Oh, man. Speaking of Lily Phillips, don't blame me for how men have sex. She's famous for extreme pornography stunts, and yes, this is the Sunday Times. It's made her rich, but what about people who say she's the female Andrew Tate? Asked Katie Glass.
I don't know. I don't think Andrew Jet Tate would cover himself in jizz.
I don't know about that. To promote her 1,000-man gangbang, Lily Phillips posed naked with her legs behind her head and a photograph reminiscent of one of Jermaine Greer on the infamous cover of Suck Magazine.
Suck magazine.
I've never heard of a magazine.
That's the most surprising part. There's still a magazine.
To champion female sexual empowerment. But while Greer is considered one of our greatest feminists, Phillips has met a rather different reception. Should her name not already be familiar to you, Phillips is best known for sleeping with 101 men in 14 hours. In doing so, the 23-year-old became the face of a new kind of pornography. Shocking, not just because it's extreme, but because of how normal it's becoming. This new wave of shock porn is partly enabled by OnlyFans, a website launched in Essex in 2016 that has caused a sex industry revolution by enabling creators to make content on phones in their bedrooms, which they sell direct to fans. It has taken porn out of the hands of powerful producers and opened the floodgates to amateur adult creators.
I bet porn's mad now.
Today, the site has more than 305 million users, generated $6.6 billion in creator payouts in 2023. And boy, this is not the right music for this. And it has more than 4.1 million creators competing for clicks and money. At the tamer end, he was a great man. He
sounds
always
like you're reading an article at a funeral. Come on now. Let's mix it up a little bit. I'm all in favor of this song, but not while you're eating this mutt.
Well, I'm sorry. This is Alexander Nakaranda.
Boy, you know
we'll play Slimy Elephant.
I don't know how many times I've listened to piano music and said, damn it, I want to hear the news.
It has taken, all right, so today the site has more than 305 million users, generated $6.6 billion in creator payouts in 2023, and has more than 4.1 million creators competing for clicks and money. At the tamer end, the pop star Lily Allen sells pictures of her feet. At the other, the English adult star Bonnie Blue has slept with 1,057 men in 24 hours. Ugh. What Lily Phillips tells us about porn. Phillips' latest stunt, she ditched her own plan to have sex with 1,000 men after Blue did it, was a 50-man backdoor challenge. Good Lord. Mm. She'll never need laxative again.
No, it'd just roll right out. Right. That's attractive.
I will leave you to guess the details. In real life...
What smells like butthole in here? No, that's me. It never closed.
In right. real life, Phillips is sweet, friendly girl next door, pretty.
With a asshole the size of the Grand Canyon.
In jeans, a white cardigan, and gold necklace, she carries a Louis Vuitton Nano Speedy bag.
What's that brown bullseye on the back of your britches?
Which is about 1420 euros in her French manicured hand. She chats about the weather and jokes her diary is Tuesday cucked video, Wednesday gangbang. Is she the face of a sexual revolution or the victim of a new kind of sexual exploitation? Phillips says her best qualities are that she's ambitious and confident. Watching how relaxed and happy she looks posing for our photographer, I'm struck by how rare and cheering it is to see a young woman so unanxious about her appearance. I get a lot of girls my age who are supportive of what I do, she says, and I believe her. When I canvass friends' views, I don't think there's supposed to be another S there.
Well, when you sleep with enough simps, you don't
right.
worry about rejection.
When I canvass friends' views about Phillips' career, I find a schism between disapproving 40-somethings and 20-year-old girls who tell me I'm impressed by her, if anything. Doesn't that tell you something? 20-year-old girls who are impressed by her, if anything.
That's not good.
I asked Phillips the highlight of sleeping with 101 men. Getting to meet that many guys that support me and her fans, she trills, claiming it also fulfilled her sexual fantasy. Did she orgasm? No, but pleasure isn't all about orgasm. Is it true that her 101 men stunt made her over 2 million? She's vague. I don't actually have a number.
I think they only got a few pumps each. That's not enough for me.
Over.
I want all the pumps!
Over 500,000 euros? Yes. Over 700,000? Yes. Over 1 million? Yeah. She's awkward. My parents always really taught me to talk about money as real vulgar, and it's just not very ladylike.
But everything else you talk about in films, okay.
I know vulgar and not ladylike are how some critics might describe filming yourself shagging 101 people.
Getting pounded in the ass, and they're like, "I hope you make a lot of money." She's like, "Please don't. That's so vulgar."
Yep. Still,
sticking in the ass.
That's an English woman for you. Still, she thinks you can't go living your life through other people's opinions.
Use my Earl Grey for lube.
Like all young women you meet these days, Phillips claims she is a feminist. She sees gender equality and being able to explore my sexual kinks and being sexually liberated. And she insisted sleeping with 101 men was a feminist act. It was, 100%, she insists. Definitely because it was all under my own rules and my decisions. I chose to put myself in that position. I was very, very in control. If it was a man in my position, he'd be talked about very differently. And I wonder if she's right. Perhaps we should hail Phillips, a modern Hugh Hefner, an icon of sexual liberation. Phillips grew up in Derbyshire in a picture-perfect house. Her parents' cleaning business earned enough to buy Range Rovers, Porsches, a few properties. We definitely had a privileged life. At 10, she dreamt of running a wedding dress shop. At university, she studied nutrition. That's when I actually found out what I really wanted to do. She started out as a content creator doing Instagram, TikTok, makeup videos, thirst traps. I've always been really body confident, she says, explaining how her interests dovetailed. She was already having a lot of casual sex, small gangbangs, three ways. I just thought, why not also share this aspect of my life? She started
and
out
you can
with
imagine women that aren't even filming on OnlyFans.
Right.
Being this sort of, yeah.
She started out with bikini pictures, solo videos, girl on girl transitioning to full porn casually. I had just got to that point where I felt so comfortable with sex and with my body that I thought, why not? I personally don't see sex as a scary, intimate thing to share. It was just something that I basically thought was like art, and I wanted to share with people.
When you share it with everyone, though, the risk of disease and nastiness,
yeah, we know,
multiplies.
When she told her parents, it definitely wasn't their first choice of a job. It was probably near to one of their last,
but
she admits.
They're her agent. I feel terrible for her because her parents are whoring her out. They're making money off of her.
They've always expressed their love for me, and they'll always support me. Should they have stopped her with the stunts? They definitely said it's not something they want me to do. But at the end of the day, I'm an adult. She would like a family one day to fall in love. This definitely affects it, but I don't think it means I'll never be able to meet someone. It just means that it has to be the right person.
It's not going to be the one that she's going to want now.
Yeah.
Those people have standards.
Does she find that the idea of saving sex for someone you love silly? That's fine for some other people, but personally not for me. Phillips first saw porn at the age of 11 at a friend's sleepover. I asked if it shaped the way she sees sex, and she says it normalized it. It made me so much more comfortable with sex. I feel like before people didn't speak about it as much. Now I can have an open conversation with you, and it doesn't make me feel embarrassed because I think sex is very normal and it's not embarrassing.
I mean, I can talk about it all day, but I ain't gonna fuck 100 women, especially with their background.
She says porn taught her about sex. I asked where she learned about female pleasure, girl-girl videos. Initially, she disagrees with the suggestion that extreme porn encourages young people to do more extreme acts, although when I point out how choking has become normalized by pornography, she admits, "Honestly, I've never thought about that, but you're so right, because everyone used to think choking is really kinky, and now in most scenes, a lot of people do it." Maybe she admits that young men are influenced by the porn they see. I understand that men are starting to think that having hardcore sex is very normal, choking, slapping, or being very rough. Yet, she insists, I don't think I should be blamed for the men wanting to have sex like this. She thinks the emphasis should not be on her, but on schools and parents that need to educate children on the types of porn young people are watching, explaining that this isn't necessarily very normal sex, this is very hardcore sex, and isn't what you should necessarily be doing on your first time. This is maybe if you feel very comfortable with each other and you've consented to it before, and it's something she's asked for. She notes that
parents should talk to their kids about it.
If they're watching porn at that age, then yes.
Yeah, they shouldn't be watching porn at that age.
Yes, but there's no way to stop it. That's why they're trying to do all these laws to block it.
I guarantee you, I can stop it.
Well, I know.
At least at the house.
But most,
they ain't gonna. What's the point of going out and just watching it if you ain't jerking off?
Well, I don't know what's going on with some of these kids. I've heard that some of them got addicted at 10, and that definitely worries me.
Well, I mean,
this is maybe if you feel very comfortable with each other and you've consented to it before and it's something she's asked for. She notes that OnlyFans makes users share their ID. All porn sites should do that. Should her work come with a warning? Yeah, 100%, definitely. What I do is extreme. I point out that the men in Phillips' gangbang, are cut from the same cloth as the men who assaulted Giselle Pellico. Phillips finds the comparison extremely disrespectful. The men, she says, knew that this was something I wanted and asked for. This is extremely different to raping a woman. I tell her I've seen her compared to Andrew Tate for promoting misogyny. That's not at all what I stand for, she says. What do you stand for? Being sexually liberated and, as a woman, doing what you want, having sex with as many people as you want without being kind of judged. Do you add to that objectification of women or perpetuate it? I just wanted to have sex and also film that and put it online, she says with a shrug. I'd like to see Phillips as a sex-positive symbol of young feminism, yet she seems so naive. When I ask her where she sees herself at 50, she optimistically trills, I'd love to be a veteran, someone in the Hall of Fame of porn. Has Phillips thought about the physical impact of porn on her body? If you're a gaffer outside, you probably got rough hands, she says. As if porn is the same as any job, although she admits, I haven't spoken to that many older women in the industry and heard their problems.
Because they're usually committed suicide by that age. Overdosed or all kinds of shit.
In a short documentary about Phillips sleeping with 101 men, she was seen bursting into tears. Now she seems awkward about it. It was very, emotionally draining day, she says. Just very, very exhausting. If you have a hard day at work, you know, sometimes people can cry. And I'm just a very emotional person. I cry a lot at everything.
And also not wanting to be known. That's like a murderer walking up in Times Square, shooting someone in the face.
Right.
Like, don't judge me as a murderer. I'm sorry. You made that your whole thing now.
Still, she admits that the experience made her feel what I imagine it's like to be a prostitute, to have sex with men who are very disrespectful and don't really follow boundaries of their time limit. This is kind of how I felt that day, that people weren't that respectful. I think back to her insistence that she is always very, very in control and start to doubt it. I wonder about the pressure she will face to go even more extremes in an industry that has gamified sex, using the human body to generate ever more outrageous content. She's already been asked to cross her boundaries to do pegging and toilet stuff. I got offered $30,000 to do a scene with a goat. Speaking to her, I am reminded of Annabelle Chong, who became one of the first proponents of extreme porn in the 90s, when she had sex 251 times with 70 men in 10 hours for a film called World's Biggest Gangbang. I don't remember that. Phillips
Do you
knows.
Not remember it? It was critically acclaimed. I think it won 2 Emmys. What are you talking about? You don't have heard of it.
Phillips knows the name right away. She walked so I could run. I point out that the talk show host Jerry Springer called Chong's actions the height of human degradation. Nothing more than what I would consider consensual violence, violence to the body, as well as the notion of what is a woman, what is a human being. Phillips shakes her head. If she has consented to it, and it's on her terms, and this is exactly what she wants to do 100%, then I don't think it's anything like that. Before she goes, I ask her about the picture of her posing as Greer did. She laughs. I've never heard of her, she says.
That's like fat girls and ice cream. It looks classy for one ice cream cone, but when you tell them all the ice cream you can eat, shit gets nasty quick. And I ain't... No.
It's not long.
She's defeating her argument by doing what she's doing, because at this point it's not even sexual, because some of the guys aren't getting off, I'm sure. You know, she just... Say next, take a number, next.
So,
who wants this? Ugh, that'd be like sticking your dick in pudding that swims around your dick. It's gross.
All right, so we've got one article, and then we have these side articles I'm going to go into. Shin Megami Tensei artist Kazuma Keneko says that teaching AI to draw like him was more time-consuming than making art from scratch.
Oh.
Yeah, Kolpo and former Atlus veteran Kazuma Kaneko recently announced that their new roguelike deck builder, Tsukuyomi the Divine Hunter, will launch on May 7th on Steam and mobile platforms. In a pre-launch interview with GameSpark, he talked about the game's AI Kaneko system, which uses an image-generating AI model trained on his own art to generate custom cards based on each player's decisions. Tsukuyomi the Divine Hunter is a free-to-play game that mixes dungeon exploration and turn-based card battles. Its original concept, character designs, and world-building were created by Kaneko, this being his first big project with Kolpo after his departure from Atlus. The AI Kaneko system in Tsukuyomi the Divine Hunter uses the player's activity log, choices made during exploration, battle, history, etc., as prompts for creating personalized cards with unique names, art, and effects. According to the developers, it was trained exclusively on art he made after joining Kolpo. But how is this possible, given the huge number of images needed to train a model? Based on their explanation, it seems they initially trained it on dozens of original illustrations by Kaneko, then generated hundreds of thousands of images based on this training. Then they filtered out the good results, judged by Kaneko to be faithful to his style for further training and so on. However, this process of refining the quality of the AI's output was not simple, as Kaneko explains. This method worked fine for humanoid characters, but when it came to depicting fantastical beings that don't exist in real life, like creatures with two heads, for example, was much harder. To help out the process, Kaneko drew and supplied extra reference images to get the AI closer to outputting what was needed. Then when something even vaguely close came out of it, he would take multiple outputs and manually composite them together to make the envisioned image to be used for further training. Honestly, it'd just be faster if I drew the whole thing myself from start to finish, he laughs. Mm-hmm. He comments. Okay, so also we have another thing. Level 5 is saying that games are now being made 80 to 90% by AI. Making aesthetic sense a must for developers. As AI becomes more common in game development, in order to break through, devs will need to have a sense of aesthetics, says Akihiro Hino. Akihiro Hino, CEO and president of Ni No Kuni and Professor Layton series developer Level 5, recently spoke about the growing presence of generative AI in game dev, suggesting that around 80 to 90% of codes are written using AI tools. Wow! As Famitsu reports, new participants of the Top Game Creators Academy, a program created by Japan's CESA, Computer Entertainment Suppliers Association, in collaboration with the government-associated organizations in order to raise a new generation of young developers, were welcomed by Hino, who also serves as the principal of TGCA. In his speech, he pointed out that with generative AI becoming so common in game dev, having a sense for aesthetics will be of key importance for young developers to break through in the global market. Through this program, I hope many of you will get to soar to the global stage as game devs. While I am also actively working as a developer, I have recently found myself thinking that AI technology is encroaching upon the creative world. Currently, around 80 to 90% of codes are written by AI and then fixed up and finalized by human programmers. In other words, it means that right now, around 80 to 90% of games are made by AI. And it does not just stop at programming. AI technology is encroaching on art, music, oh yeah. I've already almost done. I've finished one album in AI, guys. I'm just not ready to release it yet. And even game design on a large scale. Not to mention that it's already becoming common sense in the creative world to rely on the power of AI to boost work efficiency. That is why I believe that aesthetic sense is a necessary skill for game developers. Hino points out that regardless of whether something was made by humans or AI, it is important to be able to distinguish the good from the bad and select only the finest elements to implement in your work. He also adds that, in order to become the best in the business, up-and-coming game devs will be required to be fully proficient using AI tools and to use their aesthetic sense to further refine their work. This isn't the first time that Level 5 went transparent regarding the usage of AI, aside from using Stable Diffusion for generating 2D and 3D game assets. They have been using ChatGPT for brainstorming characters and the text-to-speech synthesizer software VoiceVox to generate temporary voice lines. However, as Hino explained in his speech, the AI-generated elements are supposedly fixed and further refined by human devs before they're implemented. Yeah, so there you go. Alright, so this is kind of relevant to our channel. The 100-line Last Defense Academy script is long enough to print 60 paperback novels. That means that it's longer, and by the way, the localizer for Rants 10 actually commented on this. It is 2 million more Momonji than Rants 10. So Rants 10 is no longer the longest video game in history, as far as text is concerned. Now, the 100 line is. It's got 100 endings. Mm-hmm. Yep. And some people don't, and I've seen reviews that say it's pretty bad. It's not that good. But, he did say, Steiner, of course, he did say, Rants 10 is still the longest erogay adult game ever made. But is no longer the longest game ever made, as far as script. It's been 2 weeks since the official release of The 100 Line Last Defense Academy on April 24th, and it's been met with positive reception, with a Metacritic score of 85, very positive review on Steam. We've already written about the insane amount of illustrations, character portraits, music, and other content. 2Q Games created in order to match the convoluted storyline. It's 100 routes! Jesus, that's a lot of routes. However, just when you start thinking The 100 Line can't get any crazier, it somehow ends up surprising you with even more deranged background info from its devs. In a special interview with Den Famico Gamer, voice actors Taihi Kimura, voice of Takumi Sumino, and Tomio Kurosawa, roles of Nozomi Kirafuji and Kashima Kurara, as well as The 100 Line director Kazutaka Kodaka, gathered to talk about their work on the game. Gathered to talk about their work on the game, including the intensely long script that Kodaka wrote, most of which Kimura and Kurosawa had to perform. When Kodaka first counted, the 100-line script was around 5 million characters. Text length in Japanese is measured by character count, not by word count. However, that quickly turned into 6 million characters, which is, as Kodaka said, the length of around 60 paperback novels. He was asked by the translators to reduce the amount of text, and even though he did succeed in doing so at one point, new ideas kept coming and the script ended up becoming even longer. Kurosawa noted that she received a digital copy of the script, joking that if this had been happening back when voice actors received only analog scripts, she would have to deal with a mountain of papers. Kodaka then clarified that there are two versions of the script made for all voice actors. The first version is a full script, including all the lines for every character in the game, while the second version is an excerpt script, which only contains the lines of the voice actor's respective character. Taking into account the sheer volume of the script, multiplied by 2 for each voice actor, and the storyline itself having 100 different variations, it's apparently quite difficult for the voice actors to keep track of the story. Kurosawa mentions that before starting most of her recording, she had to ask, pardon me, the directors, what storyline she was acting out, which characters were dead and alive at that point, and what the relationships between the characters were in the storyline. In the 100 line, each of the 100 routes eventually takes a life of its own, having different characters survive under different circumstances from different relationships and share different secrets about themselves. Which is why it comes as no surprise it was so difficult for the voice actors to manage such a huge convoluted script. This was especially challenging for Kimura, given that Takumi Sumino, the main character, is present throughout each of the 100 different story variations. A game having 60 novels worth of text and over 100 different endings may sound overwhelming for some, but Kodaka stresses that you don't have to play through all of them, as long as you make choices that sit right with you and are able to find an ending you're satisfied with. What's most important when playing games is to have fun. The 100 Line Last Defense Academy is now out on Steam and Nintendo Switch. Okay. We've got one other thing, and this is another game related thing, but this is a little different. Let's see, where was it? Aha! PC gaming remains undefeated. Nintendo now says it has the right to brick your Switch if it thinks you're pirating games or modifying the console. Citizen, we have detected an installation of unlicensed Bowsette software modification. Prepare for an interdiction by a licensed Nintendo paramilitary subcontractor. First spotted by GameFile. Readers may encounter a paywall. Nintendo has recently...
First they call it Nintendo Paywall.
Nintendo has recently changed its online user agreement in multiple consumer unfriendly ways just before the launch of the Switch 2. Chief among them, Nintendo asserts the right to render your console permanently unusable if it determines you're in violation of the agreement. Nah. Nintendo's specific new phrasing, distinct from its prior EULA from 2021, is that you acknowledge that if you fail to comply with the foregoing restrictions, Nintendo may render the Nintendo account services and or the applicable Nintendo device, emphasis mine, permanently unusable in whole or in part. The restrictions in question are that you may not publish, copy, modify, reverse engineer, lease, rent, decompile, disassemble, distribute, offer for sale, create derivative works of any portion of the Nintendo account services. Mm. Bypass, modify, decrypt, defeat, tamper with, or otherwise circumvent any of the functions or protections of the Nintendo account services, including through the use of any hardware or software that would cause the Nintendo account services to operate other than in accordance with its documentation and intended use. Obtain, install, or use any unauthorized copies of Nintendo account services. Exploit Nintendo account services in any manner other than to use them in accordance with the applicable documentation and intended use. In each case, without Nintendo's written consent or express authorization, or unless otherwise expressly permitted by applicable law. For context, the same section of the EULA used to read, you are not allowed to lease, rent, sublicense, publish, copy, modify, adapt, translate, reverse engineer, decompile, or disassemble any portion of Nintendo account services without Nintendo's written consent or unless otherwise expressly permitted by applicable law.
I feel like that's going to bite them in the foot.
The sections I most take issue with are the prohibitions on copying, modifying, or decompiling software, particularly as it no longer accounts for it being expressly permitted by applicable law, as well as hardware software modifications that would cause the Nintendo account services to operate other than in accordance with its documentation and intended use. No game or hardware modding, no extracting ROMs, something Nintendo continuously asserts we cannot do, even though it is a legally protected consumer right, and no dual booting to another OS. There's also the very legitimate concern of the notoriously heavy-handed, litigious company acting on false positives. I don't know what means Nintendo has to detect such activity and kill a console, but I'm getting a clear message. You spent $450 on this hardware, but Nintendo does not think you own it. There are plenty of legitimate reasons to jailbreak or modify a console or extract a ROM from a game you own. Many original Switch games run better via PC emulation on the original console, and Nintendo is only just catching up to that compatibility with the Switch 2's potentially compromised backwards compatibility. Even more pressing is the inevitable discontinuation of proprietary online services like we saw recently with the 3DS and Wii U. Just before that was finalized, Nintendo pushed an update to 3DS consoles, which made them harder to jailbreak. This is also something that makes Nintendo's subscription-based access to its classic games library all the more galling to me. And Nintendo's new EULA update and now explicitly warns that it may discontinue its online services. In the face of such unreliability, user modification of a device to ensure it remains fully functional is a perfectly reasonable solution. Going beyond legitimate hardware modifications, I'm a firm believer that piracy is as much a question of service and convenience as finance. And Nintendo's moves to consolidate its own control of products people legitimately purchase are inconvenient, annoying impositions that will annoy fans and drive away customers. Amid an ongoing campaign against emulation, Nintendo continues to throw its muscle around, emboldened by the generation-defining sales success of the original Switch, but also clearly threatened by the rise of PC handhelds, emulators which run its own games better than the original hardware, and rumblings of future Xbox and PlayStation portables. I feel vindicated in my assessment that the Switch 2 is all stick and no carrot. Lacking truly exciting industrial design innovations, except for the Joy-Con mouse, which I actually quite like, or tech hardware improvements to set the console apart from a more crowded handheld market. By the way, the thing is only powerful as a 1060. My old graphics card from way back when was a 1660.
Well, I had never thought of Nintendo as being state-of-the-art, because they're always behind on graphics.
Yeah. Which I actually quite like are tech hardware improvements to set the console apart from a more crowded handheld market. The Switch 2 can only rely on name recognition, customer inertia, and console-exclusive games to move units. much like its living room-bound rival, the PlayStation 5. All these console manufacturers have well and truly left behind the plug-and-play, it just works convenience that used to set them apart from PCs. And there's even more in the EULA that's worth flagging, as pointed out by GameFile. A change in the wording of the EULA for minors that places responsibility on their legal guardians seems designed to further head off embarrassing lawsuits, like the infamous Joy-Con drift ones, ensuring such cases are forced into arbitration. Nintendo also joins in an unfortunate trend we can't even escape on PC, explicitly spelling out that we do not own our games and instead only license them. The last embarrassment aside, these odious impositions are a big part of why I am largely a desktop and Steam Deck exclusive gamer at this point. I want to understand, modify, and be able to use the hardware I purchase for as long as I see fit, not be beholden to the proprietary services of a notoriously consumer-unfriendly company. Sure, Microsoft keeps trying to push a new version of Clippy that lies and screenshots your credit card information, but Linux gaming only keeps getting better thanks to SteamOS. If things get bad enough in the house that Bill built, I'll make the move. I still love the original Nintendo Switch, but everything I've learned about its follow-up makes me think that the 2017 hybrid console was lightning in a bottle. Something that Nintendo has always done to its newer systems. Imagine writing a whole article of misinformation because you can't pirate and isn't within your rights to do so if a license is copyrighted. Nintendo account services are what you can get bricked for modifying, not the console itself. Learn how to actually read and understand the text before you comment. How do those boots taste? I suggest you take your own advice, since the exact wording Nintendo used was rendered the Nintendo account services and or applicable Nintendo device permanently unusable in whole or part. And it's in the article you're attempting to correct. If you read a little further, you'll also see that part that said and or applicable Nintendo device, which sounds like a console to me. Please learn how to read the text and understand it before you try to comment on this. Does this count only Switch 2 or everything? Because if so, yeah, they're gonna have a lawsuit. Don't get me wrong, I've been in love with Nintendo since Donkey Kong. Undefeated at what? Do you seriously only game on PC? Yeah. It's gonna be the funniest thing when it all gets cracked anyway and people don't even own Switch 2s to be able to access the software faster and easy than people that bought it legitimately. If I had any respect for Nintendo, it's officially completely gone. Last console I owned was the GameCube. No, I'm not going to do that.
Last one I owned was the Wii.
Yep. But with PC, I have no need for them anymore, and I'll probably never need another one. We even have superior handheld options now, too. Remember, Nintendo fans have nobody to blame but themselves. They had an opportunity to speak up and take a stand against high prices and this kind of behavior from Nintendo by boycotting the Switch, too. This whole notion that you don't own what you purchase needs to be legislated and litigated into extinction. I agree.
Yep.
It is completely consumer unfriendly, and I feel it abrogates one's rights and freedoms at the altar of the almighty dollar. People have rights. Multi-billion dollar corpos should have very narrow and limited rights that should never be allowed to screw over the customer.
Yeah, once you sell something to someone, it should be theirs.
If I recall correctly, it was argued in court that, in the U.S. that owning digital games would be to imply the right to sell them as well, which whoever it was claimed would be impossible to implement without damaging first-party sales. I'm sure there would be other legal snags, but just adding a surcharge to reselling would solve that issue. If you want to resell a game you finished, so you sell it for $10, but the current price is $45. So Steam or wherever you bought it adds a $35 charge that they split between themselves and the publisher, just like a regular purchase, essentially turning the used market into a mini-sale from their perspective anyway. What, are we licensing physical property now too? This sounds like it should be illegal. Now? You literally never weren't. They're called shrink wrap licenses for a reason. By removing the shrink wrap of the item, you're consenting to the license. And they've applied to nearly every physical piece of media or hardware ever purchased since the birth of retail. If you think this is egregious, you might want to see what kind of stuff companies like John Deere do with their machinery. Imagine having your $2 million combine remotely bricked because you decided to do a repair yourself instead of paying them to do it. Mm. Oh well, that's made up my mind on whether to get a Switch 2. Hard pass it is. So Nintendo believes it has the right to destroy other people's property, which is classified a crime.
Yeah.
Apparently now, terrorism. Well, it's nice
yeah,
to know.
Yeah, because it's overseas.
Well, it's nice to know that I'll definitely be giving the Switch 2 a pass. I don't pirate or mod consoles or console games, though I do mod PC games, usually only within the bounds of mod support. But the idea that Nintendo thinks it should be justifiable to brick hundreds of dollars worth of hardware because they believe you're violating their terms of service is concerning.
Yeah, I think mm-hmm. there's going to be a lot of mistaken dismantles. And it's
right.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things. Their terms are very broad because they get a lawyer to go over it very thoroughly so they can change it as they see fit, usually.
It's one thing to say suspend access to online platforms and storefronts, even if that has concerning ramifications, but to brick hardware is exceptionally egregious.
I think tariff the shit out of them.
Alright. Okay, so the first driverless semis have started running regular long-haul routes.
That sounds like a lot of people are gonna die soon.
Death Truck!
Death Truck. Death Watch 2025.
Driverless trucks are officially running their first regular long-haul routes, making round trips between Dallas and Houston. Remember what I talked about hackers getting a hold of it and using them as little death trucks so they could just plow over people's houses?
Shoot, just the glitch in the system can fuck your day up.
Driverless trucks are officially running their first regular long-haul routes, making round trips between Dallas and Houston. On Thursday, autonomous...
We're sorry we killed all those people. Update to model 1.
Autonomous trucking firm Aurora. Remember these? We talked about the death trucks. Aurora announced it launched commercial service in Texas under its first customers, Uber Freight and Hirschbach Motor Lines, which delivers time and temperature-sensitive freight. Both companies conducted test runs with Aurora, including safety drivers to monitor the self-driving tech dubbed Aurora Driver. Aurora's new commercial service will no longer have steady drivers. We founded Aurora to deliver the benefits of self-driving tech safely, quickly, and broadly, says Chris Urmson, CEO and co-founder of Aurora, in a release on Thursday. Now we are the first company to successfully and safely operate a commercial driverless trucking service on public roads. The trucks are equipped with computers and sensors that can see the length of over 4 football fields. In 4 years of practice hauls, the truck's technology has delivered over 10,000 customer loads. As of Thursday, the company's self-driving tech has completed over 1,200 miles without a human in the truck. Aurora is starting with a single self-driving truck and plans to add more by the end of 2025.
1,200 miles isn't that much.
Self-driving technology continued to garner attention after over a decade of hype, especially from auto companies like Tesla, GM, and others have poured billions into the tech. Companies in the market of autonomous trucking or driving tend to use states like Texas and California as their testing grounds for the technology. California-based Gatik does short-haul deliveries from Fortune 500 retailers like Walmart. Another California tech firm, Kodiak Robotics, delivers freight daily for customers.
Shoot, they're going to be giving Tracy Morgan flashbacks.
Across the South, but with safety drive.
They're going to get everybody pregnant.
Waymo, a subsidiary of Google parent company Alphabet, had an autonomous trucking arm but dismantled it in 2023 to focus on its self-driving ride-hailing services. However, consumers and transportation officials have raised alarms about the safety record of autonomous vehicles. Aurora released its own safety report this year detailing how its technology works. Unions that represent truck drivers are usually opposed to the driverless technology because of the threat of job loss and concerns over safety. Earlier this year, the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration rejected a petition for autonomous driving companies Waymo and Aurora, seeking to replace traditional warning devices used when a truck broke down with the cab-mounted beacons. The Transport Workers Union argued the petition would hinder safety. Death trucks coming soon
to your town.
Pretty much. Okay.
I'm truck drivers.
All right, so what's next? We got... Oh, yeah, a new breed of cheating on the rise, and women are fighting back.
Why? Because we're catching them?
I don't know, but I see a lot about Trump on here instead. Anyway,
We gotta deport these cheaters.
Well, is that where he's going? A Perth woman has revealed that she dumped her boyfriend for subscribing to a popular porn star's OnlyFans account, stating it's the same as cheating, and it turns out she's not alone in that view. New data has revealed that most Australians believe that if their partner looks at explicit videos and photos shared by adult content creators on the popular subscription site, then it's akin to straying from their relationship.
That's a conversation you need to have with your significant other before you get caught and y'all didn't talk about it. That's on you.
Right. The divide over what constitutes the ultimate relationship betrayal was uncovered in the results of news.com.au's Great Aussie Debate, a 50-question survey that delves into what Australians really think about the hot topics of 2025. Over 2 weeks, more than 54,000 Australians took part in the survey, revealing their thoughts on everything from the cost of living and home ownership to electric vehicles and going shoeless in supermarkets. Wow, they do that, and no subject was off the table, including attitudes towards the pay-per-view platform massively occupied by sex workers that has boomed in recent years. What emerged in the findings was that, with certain caveats, the vast majority of people consider it cheating if their other half has a subscription to view X-rated content on OnlyFans. Of those surveyed, 50% said it was definitely cheating, while another 42% said it depends on the type of interactions being had with the creator, showing that the perceptions of a partner's cheating are highly subjective and depend heavily on individual values and relationship context. Only 8% of people consider using OnlyFans a normal part of a relationship. Maddie Miller, an OnlyFans star earning $19,272 every month, said that despite her highly lucrative salary as a sex worker, she draws a line in her own relationships. Trust is so important, which is why I had to end it with an ex after I caught him looking at naked photos of other women while in bed with me. She told news.com.
While in bed?
Yes, while in bed.
Well,
if my ex had maybe asked to watch some content together, or he had expressed that he was curious, then we could have had a conversation about it. But the fact that he was deliberately looking at porn created by people I knew was not okay. It was a huge breach of my trust. I wouldn't be asking his mates for nudes. It's the same thing. It's betrayal. The 20-year-old who lives in a small mining town in Western Australia...
I wouldn't be asking my mate for nudes. I'm not into that sort of thing.
...said her former boyfriend tried to cover his tracks and lied about his OnlyFans consumption. I only found out because I saw it on his phone one night over his shoulder, she explained. That's the woman asking, talking about his mates for nudes.
Yeah.
Okay. He had tried to cover it up and said his mate sent him a link that he had opened without knowing what it was. But once I investigated further, as women do, I could see in his emails that he had subscribed to multiple women that I knew. The timestamps on the emails showed that he had been laying in bed next to me while he did it. Miss Miller described the act of betrayal as extremely damaging.
Just by reputation, or... were they from the hometown, or...?
She looked it up. She looked at timestamps.
Well, that doesn't mean she knows them. I'm sure they're...
No,
very
she knows
ladies.
Them because she works with them.
Oh, well.
Being young and having financial independence is great, but it often attracts men who don't have the best intentions, she said. Yes. And like this circumstance, they think it's okay to push boundaries that we set in place. Like it's owed to them because I do OnlyFans, but it's a job for me. Doesn't mean he can go and do whatever he wants. Much like Miss Miller's experience, the Great Aussie Debate findings reflect the complexity of the modern relationship issue.
So she's doing OnlyFans too.
Yes, and ooh, and he was upset. Well, he was hold on. You didn't even catch the whole article. All right. So the issue here is that she's an OnlyFans worker.
Yeah.
And she knows the girls that he's looking at. She's worked with them, and they've talked with each other.
She didn't know him, would it make it any better?
Huh?
If she didn't know him, would it make it any better?
The thing is, she said it was...
Only I can whore around and sleep with a bunch of people for money.
Well, listen. She said it's because these are my co-workers. And he said, I don't ask her, I don't ask his mates.
So is it a group OnlyFans?
Well, they all, the girls know each other. That's what I'm saying. The girls work together. They work together.
They work in the same business.
They communicate, what is that? They communicate, what's it called?
That'd be like someone working at Burger King going up to McDonald's like, hey, we work in the same.
No. I'm not saying that.
We're in the burgers and fries, right?
I'm not saying that. A lot of these girls are sex workers. There's chats that they're in that they talk with each other. Yeah, they do. A lot of the girls help each other out and stuff like that. They do talk amongst each other. That's been a thing for a long time.
I'm friends with their friends.
So it is like, no, but they're co-workers. They're all working for the same OnlyFans site, and they're in the higher ranks, so they're all talking with each other.
So it's one site with a bunch of women.
Yes, it's a business.
Or one OnlyFans page with a bunch of women.
Yes. Well, it's only one site.
Now they're working in the same business.
Yes, they're all in the same business.
But, yeah, if one girl's got an OnlyFans account, this girl's got
OnlyFans. Well, no, that's what I mean. But what he's saying is...
Oh, well, that's different then.
But she said, multiple women that I knew. She knew the women because she works for them. We'll go back into it.
I've known other women I've slept with after I knew the other person's woman that they knew.
I know that. But what it's saying is that she's worked with them. It's just... She said the fact that he was deliberately looking at porn created by people I knew was not okay. Because they've talked to each other as... It's a business thing. All the girls network. That's what I was looking for. They network with each other. They get on Zoom calls and meetings and they discuss things with each other. Different girls. That's how they network with each other.
Networking and actually working together is two different things.
Well, that's what I mean. They're all in the same business and they know each other.
Yes.
So when you're
the same thing, just because they're in the same business, you know...
They're all on that same site, is what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
They've got
they're
their very
the
own page. It's just one page with several
one page
women
with diff- there's different... No. Every girl has their own profile.
Well, then that's different.
Not in her eyes.
Well, she should have made that boundary when they first met.
I think she said she did.
Really?
She did say that she did.
If she did, then...
She said, he said, if my ex and maybe I asked, we watched some content together, expressed that he was curious, then we could have had a conversation about it.
And she also answered her own question. In the line of business she's in, a lot of guys she meets are unsavory characters.
That's true. That's true. She said, that's pretty much all she said there. She didn't really say a whole lot.
I sleep with all these dudes for money on my thing.
All right, hold on,
But my guy keeps looking at other whores that I know.
Right.
Not fair.
I
should be the only one to, I guarantee you, if I date
I've talked with sex workers, and... If one sex worker knows another and they talk, they will give you shit. Why are you looking at? Yeah, I've talked.
One thing, I wouldn't date a sex worker because
right.
I'm a jealous kind of guy.
Right.
I'd say if
I mean I'm to each their own.
If I'm expected to be their one and only, to be my one and only, I expect the same.
Right. That's, I mean, yeah, of course. But she says,
and in the contract, I say I might have to choke a bit.
She says she draws a line in her own relationships. She said, trust is important. Well, I had to end it with the ex. She ended it with the ex after he was looking at pictures of the other girls.
Well.
I mean, come on now. That's the thing. She says,
did you know they knew each other?
She said, it's owed to them, but because I do OnlyFans, but it's a job to me, is what she said.
So many variables.
Mm-hmm. The vast majority of women surveyed, anyway, 61.3%, believe their partner subscribing to OnlyFans is definitely cheating. In contrast, 46.1% of men quizzed stated it depends on the interaction, while only 35.5% of female respondents felt the same way. The findings demonstrate the complex of defining infidelity in the digital age, says Lucy Banks, a sex worker and owner of spicy talent agency Million Billion Media. I've been in the OnlyFans sphere since before COVID, and I've seen it evolve from a side hustle that everyone seemed unsure about to a full-blown machine that has transformed the entire adult industry, she told news.com.au. Along with that, the society and relationships have also evolved, meaning the level of transparency, emotional intelligence, and communication required to maintain a healthy relationship is now much higher. Is it cheating if your partner subscribes to someone's OnlyFans? It really depends on the relationship. As someone who not only makes content, but also works with other women in the industry, the pattern I see consistently, regardless of age, gender, or content type, is that the strongest relationships are the ones built on trust, open dialogue, and mutual respect. When news.com.au hit the streets, everyday Aussies echoed the data showing men and women were divided on what constitutes cheating on OnlyFans. One activewear-clad woman said it was cheating, but it depended on what sort of explicit content her partner was watching. While a friend who was also dressed head-to-toe in figure-hugging workout gear agreed, stating how much money was being spent also played into it. If you're paying for something interacting, you have a particular person of interest, that's definitely cheating, she said. Meanwhile, two blokes who were asked as subscribing to OnlyFans cheating said they didn't think it was akin to having an affair. However, one described it as a dog act, as it crossed the line in a relationship. If I was with someone for 5 years, I'd be like, what's going on here, he reasoned. That would be a big fight. Whereas with someone new, bye. This is nothing. Invasion of personal privacy is the ultimate betrayal. It would end our relationship. I would be ending the relationship with her. Women need to realize that being in a relationship is not a license to go through my stuff or even know every secret in my life. Sorry, personal respect for privacy doesn't work that way. That woman's situation must smell like the Gowanus Canal.
I mean, she's doing it to herself, for one thing.
And with each day passing, getting warmer, those flies shall accumulate in no time at all.
You can't be a hoe and then judge someone else for, I would say,
extremely
less offensive things in a relationship. But, you know, she's out hooking up with people, apparently, and showing her ass to everybody with a butt. I think that's a little worse. Of course, you know, it's all bad, so.
Oh, this is funny.
And a waste of money, too.
Okay, so this is funny. Phonograph has become another blight on society, much like unfettered drug use that hurts everyone it touches. The people that make it as well as the people that consume it. We lie to ourselves and say it doesn't, but the truth is we are a weak society who doesn't care about the pain and suffering that we cause as long as we get to indulge ourselves whenever we want. I am addicted to phonography. It started when I was young, collecting sepia-toned pictures of Victrolas. Makes me want to turn the crank, if you know what I mean. If your girlfriend finds out about your passion for phonography, you may have to just face the music. So you're an old schooler with those audio recordings, huh? You ought to hear my big Spiderbeck records. Very clever. Yeah.
That's funny.
Is that who that is? Big Spiderbeck.
It's probably a play on Burt Bacharach.
Oh. My mother threw out my photograph years ago. I keep the 33 and 45s at my ranch. That was funny. Oh, that I love what... See, Aussies
comments
can be
always
funny.
Better than the article themselves. But yeah, she's, I tell, that's the same thing as Lily Phillips. They aren't going to find the guys they're wanting doing what they're doing.
No, and they don't care.
And they don't.
And they won't care until they get
older. And the funny part about it is, they don't see what the problem is. You know, I keep pouring myself out for a couple of bucks on the internet. I don't know why I keep getting hoary guys.
Okay, so this is an amazing article. Local police find raccoon with meth pipe in its mouth during arrest. Springfield Township, Ohio. Police in Springfield Township had more than an interesting animal encounter this week when they crossed paths with a raccoon holding a meth pipe to its mouth during arrest. Okay, so...
Did they arrest that raccoon?
Oh, look at it. Hold on.
I bet that was an angry raccoon. What? Pretty mellow for a methed out raccoon.
So we're trying to look in and see the
raccoon. The raccoon says, come on, give me that pipe and I'll show you heaven. It said, I'll suck your dick. Well, someone's awful brave to just use latex gloves with a...
There it is. There's the meth pipe. Oh, there we go. The driver, 55-year-old Victoria Vidal Page of Akron, was detained. But when an officer walked back to Vidal's vehicle, a raccoon named Chewy was sitting in the driver's seat with a meth pipe in its mouth. Chewy had somehow gotten hold of a glass methamphetamine pipe, leading officers to further inspect the vehicle. A search of the vehicle turned up crack cocaine, meth, and three used glass meth pipes. Thankfully, Chewy the raccoon was unharmed, and notification was made to the proper authorities to determine she has the proper paperwork and documentation to own the raccoon, the post continued.
Is that the big problem?
Vidal is facing several drug charges and was cited for driving under suspension. Wow. While our officers are trained to expect the unexpected, finding a raccoon holding a meth pipe is a first. No raccoons were hurt or injured in this incident. As always, we remain committed to keeping our community safe. No matter what surprises may come our way. It is legal to own a raccoon in the state of Ohio with proper paperwork and permits. To learn more about what exotic pets you can own in Ohio, click here. Well, isn't that something? I mean... Good Lord, that's...
Oh,
I think we're going to end it right there.
Those crazy raccoons.
All right, guys, so this is the Grim Lord and Dead Penetration, and we'll see you guys next time on the Grim Articles Show.
Later.
Enjoy the decline.